start your day the Tarawee Northwest London, the 23rd of Teves, 16th of January, Rabbi Shmuel, wise Shlita in defense of the kosher list. This week's Tarawee has been sponsored Lilu Nishmas, Rab David, Ben Rab Yosef, Zeron Lavrocha, on his first yard site tomorrow, Cafe Teves. Sorry, on Wednesday, Cafe Teves.
This talk, I'm going to have to make a few apologies before I start, or a few disclaimers at least. First of all, as always with all these shiurim, although I worked for Kev, the division of the London based in, I haven't vetted or I haven't gone through any of the dayonim or the rabbonim, so what I say is complete deniability from their part. As I always say, one of the Mishnayos in Ovis I like to quote is, it says, "Al tomer kablu dati shehem rashoim v'lo yatzon," which really is referring to Dayonim. It means don't push the other Dayonim to accept your opinion. You know, because, right, we say Hashem is the Don Yechidi, and one shouldn't push. But the Meiri says it's not just Dayonim, it refers to people in general. Don't push your opinion on other people. What I'm going to say is going to be a bit light on the Torah of the Torah, way more mitzius, I hope, because although normally I prefer to focus on the Torah aspects, but I feel that at times the mitzius is not discussed, and sometimes one needs to know the mitzius before coming to the halacha. So obviously it's not going to be that way. Maybe I'll start with a story. Before I start with the story, let me first explain the title, because apparently some people were not well, I'm sure. Torah Way was very fortunate to have the schus of having two rabbonim from the OU over in the summer. One was Ramosha Elephant, who's a very senior rov in the OU, Kashrus. He also has a kehillah, I believe, in Brooklyn. He's also Magid Shir, gives Daf Yomi, very popular. And this shir is partly in response to what he said. Although Chas Sholem, it's not any way meant to be a pekiyah b'chvodei, you know, he's much more senior than I am, much more experienced than I am, but I want to point out the slight, I don't disagree with much of what he said, but the application of what he said may be where we differ. And of course we had Ramosha Hauer as well, who's not in Kashrus, but he's part of the OU. So Baruch Hashem, it's very nice when such esteemed people come and speak. And the second part is not just to do specifically with that talk, but also just generally what I hear people when they discuss kashrus, whether that's lay people, whether that's rabbonim, or whether it's even people in kashrus. The truth is, I should probably come more often to Rabbi Yanki's Shmir Saloshim Chaz Hamshir, because we actually, unfortunately, we had a choshava. A colleague who was Nifta not long ago, Sukkot's time, Achav Sukkot's Ramot Chai Katz, who, and Neilu Nishmosa in the office, we started learning regularly Shemir Saloshin, because it's such an important thing, and it's Chaim Rez Biadaloshin, I think the expression is, you know, these things are very important. So I'm a little bit nervous to say what I'm going to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Gemara in Shabbos, Kuf Dalad, is derish the various osius of the Torah, literally the Aleph base, and when we get to Shin, it says Shin is Sheker and Tof is Emes. So the Gemara asks, "My Tama Sheker Makarvin Milay, Emes Amrachka Milay." Shikra. So why is it that Emes, the letters for the word for Tav is our beginning of the Aleph is the first letter of Alpha of Aleph base, Tof is the middle, and Mem is the middle, so they're spread out. Sheker is Shin Kuf Resh all together. So the Gemara says that Sheker Makarvan Mili, Emes Merachka Mili. That basically Sheker is quite Motsui. It's something which is very Korov to us, whereas Emes is very hard to find, and you have to go far to get it. The Gemara continues to say that it says Shikra Shkiach Kushla Shkiach Maitam Shikra Achada Kare Kari Why the shin is standing on one point, on one leg, and MS is Milban Levune. It's more got a base to it. So it says, Kushta Kai Shukur Loikoi. Right? Sheker doesn't stay standing, whereas MS stands. It's actually a Medrash Alpha Besa, which has a Loshen Sheker Ein Leraglaim. And we know this from Rashi in Parshat Shlach, when the Meraglim come back and they give a report, they say Bon Alot Asher Shlachtano V'Gam Zavas Chalav Dvashi V'Hi Zepiria, and then it says Efes Ki Azom. So Rashi asks, why if they want to denigrate Eretz Yisrael, why are they giving a good report? So why did they say anything positive? So Rashi says Kol Dava Sheker She'Enim Bo Ktas Emes B'Tchilasei. I've always found both of these Gemaras, this Gemara and this Rashi, a bit puzzling, particularly ever since I've started working in Kashrus, because I've seen things which are Sheker B'Yisodom, they're Lodubim B'Loyar, nothing, Gornish B'Gornish, and yet they're accepted by people. And it's actually quite depressing when I see the way people talk about kashrus and our products and our hakshirim. I'll go back to that story. I was going to say Rabbi Beryl Wein, who many people know only from history recordings or books, actually, besides all that, is a big Talmud Chacham. He was actually the head of the OU kashrus for about 5 years. I won't go into his whole biography now, but he was someone who sat with Moshe Feinstein for, I think, about an hour a week. Whilst he was there, can you imagine having an hour to sit with Ramosha and talk Torah for an hour? It's unbelievable. And he actually wrote when he was there, he wrote a sefer called Chikri Halacha, and he has two very nice volumes also published by Moshe Rav Kook, because he later became Rosh Shiva in Monsi, and he has some very nice. He published his Shir Klolis on various mesechtas, and I came across the sefer, I learned some of it, and found it very gishmak, very lomdish, very enjoyable. So people know him just from as I say, maybe his later things, but anyway, he said when he was wanted to leave the OU after about 5 years, so they pushed him to stay, so they right. Sent him Rav Soloveitchik, to Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik said, I think, you know, you're doing a good job, you should stay. So Rav Beryl said to him, he says, I feel I'm becoming cynical. He says, I don't have the covered for Talmid Chachamim I once had. And the things you see when you're in such a business, you see the politics, you see various things. You know, I feel it's not a good thing for me to continue. He says, straight away, go away. He says, it comes to Sheikhad, well, this is Mashukhad. It comes to corruption, okay, within reason it can be dealt with. He says, but if you become cynical, it's actually on the road to Kfira. It's a very bad thing. So I'm trying not to be too cynical. Unfortunately, it's not easy. It's a big challenge. So maybe let's tackle some of what Rav Moshe Elfin said, and then we can maybe discuss a little bit more. The talk was called "Why Do All Products Need a Heksha?" Actually, there are some American agencies, you can look this up online, they actually have a list of things that don't need the Heksha. So I don't know if the OU is in a different category, but maybe let's take a step back. First of all, I can't speak about you, everyone here, but I grew up in this country with a list, right? There was this idea that you go to the kosher shops, you go to K's, you go to Kosher Kingdom, Moshe's, whatever it may be, and further afield, Stamford Hill, Manchester, you go and you have things with a heksha. A lot of it's imported from America or Eretz Yisrael, and not cheap either. And of course, there's certain things which are stamazoi, there's no question about them, fleisch, fish, grape juice, wine, cheese, these things, but it's a dover poshet, they need a heksha. But we grew up with this idea that there's a list. I remember having these, most people don't buy them now, the actual printed list. So what is that based upon and why do we have it? So I think in every page of the list, it always says, you know, always better to buy products with a heksha. I think I think it's generally understood. But why Bechlal is there this? So let's do the flip side, because Rav Moshe Elfin comes and says, everything needs a heksha. And how practical is that? So if you go back in time in America, actually, there's a lot of what I'm going to say is taken from there's a law professor in Georgia University, not exactly the mecca of Jewish life, but he's a Shomer Torah mitzvahs, and he's written a number. He's a law professor. He specializes in food or certification standards anyway, and he's written a book on kosher certification. He's written many articles and given interviews, and he explains some of the background. So he talks about, for example, the kashrus in America. Kashrus in America, not that I want to belittle the Americans, but when the first Yidden to move to America were Reform, and certainly when the Frum Yidden started moving in, if you actually read in detail, it's quite shocking. But till about the Second World War, the kashrus in America wasn't just poor; it was diabolical, to the point where people who wanted to keep kashrus had a genuinely hard time. There was no real regulation. The butchers had all the koyach, and people think about here that maybe there were issues, but it pales in comparison. And Baruch Hashem, various people, one of them was Shlomo Alexander Rosenberg, who headed the OU for over 20 years, helped to bring about many more products to be kosher. One of the important products in those days was Crisco, which was margarine. Now, to us, it's Dov Hosha, you can get par of other things, but in those days, and kosher, in those days there was a lot of suet, a lot of fat, animal fat, and a lot of it was a major breakthrough to get something which was genuinely kosher and parav. It was one of the major breakthroughs. And there were various other products. What's interesting about it is that actually the Goyisha companies did a lot of the legwork, meaning that, I don't know if it was Coca-Cola, various big companies that got kosher certification started taking out ads in the New York Times and various other places, billboards that we're kosher is clean. And they wanted to use it as a selling point. And I always make the joke, if you go back to the back of a kosher restaurant, you won't be thinking kosher is clean, but that's the selling point that they used. And what's interesting about it is, if you go to America now, over 40% of the products on the shelf have some sort of kosher logo. Okay, some kosher logos are more recognizable than others, some are more reliable than others. But writing in about 2013, so this is already probably a little bit outdated, but he said there's about 10,000 companies with 135,000 products, and there's about 12 million consumers for kosher products in America, which total up to about $12 billion in retail sales. So again, that's probably gone up a little bit, or not a huge amount, but a little bit since then. So the question is, who is buying all these kosher products? If you actually stopped and made a cheshbon, right, who are all the kosher consumers? There's no 12 million from Yidden in America. I don't even think there's 1 million kosher people in America. And then he tells us that actually only 8% are Jewish people for buying it for religious reasons. That means there's 92% of the market in America for kosher. 92% is goyim. And they're not buying it for religious reasons. Okay, so why are they buying it? Why would anyone buy it? So first of all, the difference between, you take a, go buy a granola bar in the supermarket. If you buy a kosher granola bar with an OU, let's say, on it, it's not going to be more expensive, really, than one that's not. If you're doing mass production, yeah, when you say kosher, I don't think they're going into the butcher and buying a chicken, even Empire chicken. They're not buying that. That's not what we're referring to when we say kosher with a heksher. But if you're going to go and get an oil, a granola bar, whatever it may be, a fruit puree, a drink, whatever it may be that you're going to buy, a cake, you'll buy. So if the price isn't really different, so you may want to get kosher. Why would you want to get kosher? Because in America, the food industry is regulated by the FDA, that's the Food and Drug Administration. And the FDA, this is not my claim, this is this is Timothy D. Litton, who says this, the law professor. He says there's a long history of scandals and corruption and all sorts of other things, and there's been plenty of documentary films that have been issued about what goes on in America in terms of food production and how unsafe it is. And therefore, the Goyish people, consumers, think if they've got some sort of logo or some sort of accreditation, they don't even really necessarily know what kosher is, but they like that. They think it gives them a certain, I won't say safety, but a certain peace of mind, which they otherwise wouldn't have. And this is also reflected in the fact that only in America, not here, you get supermarket chains like Whole Foods, where you'll pay something like £5 for a banana or something, $5 for a banana. It's just staggering the amount of money. But all organic, vegan, these things are all very big in America. Now, why am I darshaning on about this stuff? It's not in the gap. The answer is because, unfortunately, I feel that the Americans have actually forgotten this. And I think a lot of people who even work in kashrus in America are not familiar with this. And I say that because there's something called ACCO. ACCO is the Association of Kashrus Organizations. They get together once a year. Most recently, they came up with this idea, various others, they had a discussion about alcoholic drinks, which is one of the things Moshe Leffens discussed when he was here. And they think now that beer should have a hechsher. But Gidden shouldn't buy beer without a hechsher. Why? Because there are all these IPAs and microbreweries and all sorts, and they have all sorts of flavors or other things they're putting in, which are taka treif, oyster and crab and echvaisos, all sorts of things. I read what I wasn't at this meeting. I read what they wrote afterwards. I found it a bit of a pelle in many ways because, first of all, the fact that there's some microbreweries doing this stuff, I don't see how that affects the major brands, first of all. Although they wrote, oh no, people won't be able to tell the difference between this and that and the other. I don't see anything. The person's been buying the major brand beer for however long, you know, Mechtesa, you're going to now mix that up with a small, unheard of brand or up and coming brand, I don't know. Second of all, they seem to, in that document, they bring Rav Weissmandel, who went on about whiskey, and he was talking about the Gemaras and in the Avodah Zarah, which we won't go into now, but the Gemara actually is talking about Sheikhar. Gemara doesn't say whiskey or Yain Sarif or anything like that, just as a Sheikhar. Sheikhar, the Pashas of the Gemara, is actually beer. So any heterium that you might apply to bourbon in America, I don't see why it wouldn't apply now to beer either. But more importantly than all this, the implication I got from this document was that if Yidden will push, if our kashrus agencies will push and will put the foot down, say, oh, we're only going to allow with a hechsher, so they'll take a hechsher. The beer companies will now get a hechsher. And it's and the Mechilas Kavodam, I think it's just completely balmy. It's mental. It's mishabir. Because the people who are interested in kosher in America, first of all, 92% are not Yidden. That's first of all. So you're gonna have to get this idea across to the non-kosher people and how they're gonna manage to get the goyim to go buy kosher beer. And what kind of person buys beer in the first place? He's not usually the person who's so vegan and organic and he's not that. He's not the shared mentality. So I think Baruch Hashem, Chaste Hashem, that in America, they're so comfortable with kosher and they're so used to having everything kosher, they feel kiddu, they've got the clout to now go and bring it about. Listen, if they can do it, matov u'manan, that's wonderful, gezunt haheit. But I don't think they'll be successful with clout. I don't think it'll ever happen. And that's a reflection of here. You know, people. When I joined KLB some years ago, people were talking about, some people in the office were saying, they're hoping to push and have more products with a hechsher rather than an approval, which I'll try and explain soon. As I say, I think it's a little bit, a bit of a pipe dream. At the end of the day, one of the things that works for us and against us is that the EU regulations and UK regulations for food safety are way, way more strict than America. In fact, I've heard Rabbonim give kashrus talks in America, and they say that the heter of Ramosha, which, understandably, they're not so happy about, I'm referring to these people, obviously there are plenty of people who are happy with Ramosha's heter about milk, it only applies to America, it doesn't apply to Europe. And the truth is, if anything, it's the other way around. If anything, the Pikuach Memshala in Europe is way much stricter than America. And in fact, it's only in America you get a bottle of milk and it'll tell you it doesn't have E. coli, and it doesn't have hormones, and it doesn't have vitamin A, and it doesn't have this. What's the half a minute that would have all these things? Why would I think there's E. coli in my milk? The answer is because the farming industry in America is much less rigorous and much less safe than the EU. And the problem, the knock-on effect then is that there's never been a push from Goyim to have kosher certification. There isn't really that interest, and therefore it's very difficult. And therefore, you know, it shouldn't be understood that Kiru, I think maybe Rav Moshe Erfurth feels, maybe others feel, that, you know, this is a kind of a look at chila, that we haven't done enough about it, and that if we'd only put more effort into it, we'd have more and more kosher products. But the truth is that that's not the case, and every product that becomes kosher is already a bit of a simcha, because it's very hard work. And of course, then you have to take on the other side, which is that understandably certain people are not satisfied with a general kashrus. In other words, even when you have mashkichim visiting and they're doing their due diligence, there's still a certain portrayal that some hachshirim are better than others, so you end up splitting your market anyway, so it makes it even more difficult to get something that's kosher. Before I actually tackle the actual examples that Moshe gave, I can't tell you the amount of people I've heard who just, it's a sort of almost like I use the expression of Yiftach Hashem's piyosim. There's people who make comments about products, and if you actually just ask them, you say to them, okay, how many factories have you been to? How many mashkichim do you know? Can you say by name? How many products have you ever seen being made? How many ingredients do you know? How this ingredient's made? Please explain to me what the process for this ingredient is. Nothing. It's like popping a bubble. Nothing. It's veneno. So that's a layperson. Okay, so we like, you know, we have a schmooze by the tail. Yeah, I heard this, I heard that. Okay, this is one thing. But I've heard this from certainly Bashem, and certainly once from a Rav. So a community Rav, even Choshev a Rav, I've heard people ask about various products, and the Rav says, oh, I don't really want that. And again, this Rav, how much does he know? He might be a Choshev a Rav, and I go to my most complex shayas. I'm not denying or questioning his Torah knowledge, but Metzias, how much does he, in fact, on the ground? Is he hearing something first-hand, second-hand, 20th-hand? Where did he get his information from? So I'll tell you how far this goes, and you can take a kal vachomer from this. A ma'aseh shehaya, within the last 18 months or so, the KLBD gives a heksher to KTC, which is an oil company, and have done for many years. And two hashgachas, two rabbanim from Duran Hashgachas went there, because of course, you know, chas v'shalom, that, you know, KLBD, no, you have to have more of a heimash heksher, okay. So they went there. So afterwards, they said, yeah, everything was very good. The one thing they weren't happy with, what's the one thing they're not happy with? Said the tankers that bring in the oil to before it gets processed, they didn't have the three previous loads recorded. And for that, they're not happy about. In other words, a keli, whether it's hot or cold, you want to know what was in there beforehand, right? These things are not always dedicated to product type, very often they're not. They weren't happy about that. Now, let's tackle this. First of all, for the most part, some of these oils, not all of these oils, but the main oils are not heated loads, and they probably won't have kovash either. Certainly, so they had one previous load recorded, right? But that wasn't enough. So they need three. Mech tesa three. Where do you get three from? So three is not in halacha. I mean, you're going to stretch your imagination. There's cases of milu ve'irui. There's you know, klicheres, and there's all sorts of things you could latch onto to try and maybe. But in halacha, we know if you kasha something, you kasha something. Between each load, there's a clean. There's a hot steam clean. And anyway, as I've said here before, generally speaking, a tanker load, which is about 26 tons or 29 tons, because of the size of the container, it's Simon Sadi Gimel, Shach points out, Kli, Rechovo, Nechosh, Sodak, that normally a pot at home doesn't have shishim in the contents to Kedei Levatel, the entire thickness of the doifen, which, by the way, if it's kovosh, it's not klar that you need the entire thickness of the doifen, it's a silver shiloh for metal. But even, let's say, take the entire thickness of the metal, there's a sheer bittel. And we're talking about a non-Jewish company, we're not talking about a yid. So you'll say, it's 1%, but it's a goyish company. But this is all talk. The truth is that the entire thing is lo dubov lo yet. Again, one of these cases when absolutely wrote it. The truth is that KTC is part of something called SCOPA, which is the Seed Crushers and Oil Processors Association, for anyone who wants to know. And SCOPA have very strict rules about the oil. First of all, kimat, every single previous load will be oil. And not only that, there's something called a SCOPA book, which records all the previous loads, including three previous loads. So what was it? Gornish, the whole thing was nothing. So they asked to see a previous load. They got a printout of a previous load, and it was a previous load. They didn't see three previous loads on this document. Oh, that's it. Good. So in other words, it's a bit like a case of Ein Ladai Mash, Ein Lavros. But hey, it's the wrong way around. You know, they didn't do a Drish al Chakir. They didn't ask a follow-up question. Okay, this is the one previous. How do I see the second previous load, the third? They didn't even ask that question. State one. Okay, I'm not so happy. So, as I say, it's one of those examples where you have two Rabbonim from two different Hashgachas going into a factory that already has a Hechsher and saying that there's an issue because I didn't see the three previous loads. Did you ask for it? Did you ask how? No. And by the way, this is part of the aggravation of my daily job of Mashgichim who are doing this sort of, unfortunately, cursory sort of checking. You know, you see, Bashe Usham, it's Azoi, finish. And what will be tomorrow? And what will be the next day? No, I saw what I saw. And that's not really the way one checks a factory, or something, audits a factory. You do an audit, you do another audit. Imagine if you have an accountant or someone from the tax man who does this audit. He doesn't just look at what you've presented to him, he does a proper Drish v'chakira. Okay. So go directly to the examples of Ramosha gave. First of all, one of them was a story of afterdates. I think everyone remember that. First of all, that they changed to be milchik 20 years ago. So in other words, they actually have milchik in. The example, I wasn't working for KLBD 20 years ago, but the example in the worst case scenario is an approval, I should explain, it's not the same level as a hechsher, okay. But what we're talking about at the most dairy equipment, because they flush the line with butter oil. They're not going to leave that as is because they don't want to have a high oil content in the next chocolate. So they're going to flush it or clean it minimally. So you're talking about nut by nut. Let's assume it's the hetera because we're talking about butter, not milk powder, anything like that. So you're talking about nut by nut. So the halacha is that after your fleishik meal, as long as it's not together with the fleish, the halacha is that dairy equipment products can be eaten. Even look at chila lefilurimo. They're not. It's not a. No one was over any isurim here. So I'm not chas v'shalom machin avek, okay, you know, it's something that can change, and that's why it's always better to have something with hechsher. But what are we talking about here? What's the great calamity that, someone had a chocolate, which is a dairy equipment chocolate after the flesh. Okay. Another thing he talked about was Southern Comfort, which in America, the metzias is very different to here and to Europe. In America, they have a very strange tax system whereby drinks, for some reason, have a lower tax bracket if they're grape ethanol or they have some wine in. Which is why there are much more problems with liqueurs and even bourbons than they sometimes add in a bit of wine. There's a famous Tshuva Ramosha blended whiskey going back decades ago. This does not apply to Europe. Even though Europe is a wine-growing country, there's not a lot of grape ethanol around generally, and it's more expensive than regular ethanol. And therefore, when this story of Grey Goose vodka, which he also mentioned, came out, straight away it didn't sound mistaba. It straight away didn't sound, before you can do it, I mean, okay, you have to check it, double check. But the whole thing was nishketoy, nishkeflogan. Right? Because you wouldn't go and spend, when there's readily available sugar beet-based ethanol or wheat ethanol, the roiv, you're going to go and find grape ethanol, it's not mistaba. And the third thing he mentioned was canned vegetables, which he mentioned in China is a problem because off-season they do treif. So first of all, again, you're not talking about tzazaman, you're not talking about the same time treif and kosher. There's a tshuva the Minchas Yitzchok in, I think it's Chelek Gimel Chof Vov, where he talks about b'shalakim, he talks about also the worry about in canned, when you cook a can, you do a pasteurization, you fill it into a can, then it goes into what's called a retort, so there's steam cooking it in the can. And he talks there even when there's treif and kosh at the same time. And he starts saying maybe there's a heta, and then he starts saying, oh, I've had a concert. And then he's not in paskin. But you can see he's got a very strong tzad to allow if there's at the same time kosh and treif in the same ritual. So kal vachomer, when you've got a production, which is a different time of the year, before they change over, they'll definitely do a hot, full clean. So I don't see it as such a big problem, but more to the point, the fact is that he's talking about America, which gets canned food from China. So the biggest producer is China. In Europe, the supplier for canned foods is not China, generally speaking. Okay, the biggest producer of canned foods is Italy. And I've gone to factories in Italy where I've seen actually English supermarket peas and corn and various other things being produced on the line with the English label. So it's not coming from China in the first place. So again, it's an example where Ramosha has got a lot of yedias and has come here and said things which are accurate if you're in Brooklyn, maybe. So, and certainly, there's no reason why in Brooklyn you should buy something about Hersha. And it's also true that some of the kashrus worries that he raised may be relevant to Brooklyn. They're not necessarily relevant to London or Europe, per se. So, just to finish off, I'll say one last point, which is the other way around. Unfortunately, in our tzibur, Baruch Hashem, we're pushing for, if anything, to have more hechsherim and more things kosher. We're not looking to be matzim more things. But we do also have the wider community who feel that maybe we should be more makel and allow more things. The truth is that there's a very strong svara, which is brought in halacha several times, in the Yerodeh, called Stam Klein Ben Yoimai. I don't have time to go into that entire sugya, but it should be understood, if you look in Kuf Chof Beis in Pesachei Tshuva, in Sif Dalad, and he refers to Yehuda and others, it's not always the case that you can always say Stam Klein Ben Yoimai. Meaning that Min HaStam, yes, you can say that, but the example they give is, let's say you have a poor person, you have a Goy who's a poor person, he has very limited Kalim. He has only... okay, and he eats treif, he's not a vegetarian or something, and leaving aside any questions of Bishul, Yisrael, anything like that. So in such a case, your chazakah's got a reisah. You can't just say, it's fine. No, in this case, it doesn't apply. So the same is true with factories. Baruch Hashem, we're lucky that most factories in this country, at the moment at least, do close for the weekend, they do have a clean down, and very often someone like Milchiket, because it's an allergen, will be done at the end of the week, and then you'll have a weekend downtime very often, but not always the case. And therefore, there is a team of dedicated people who manage this so-called list to check these points, and it's done very carefully and with great detail, not to just rely on things like Bittel or Samkirim and Yomo. That's the that's the Shlav Aleph, that's the beginning stage, but then of course one has to do one's due diligence to check on these things. Shlav Aleph.